Okay, let's see where we were. So we talked about the node structure. So I hope during the assignment that you start getting used to going up and down, around, trying to find things, and keeping the browser there and using XPath in the browser and follow and see what's what shows up. So here, if you have this one here, is it, should I increase the size or is it readable? Sorry? Increase the size. So you can see queries here, and we can look up in the document here. So this way we can go up and down and traverse and look at the structure, and we can try our XPath queries and see what we get. And also we can look down here to see what we get, what it is. In this case, it's a list. We see the there's an array, so it's a list. And if we have a list, then we need to remember to get one of the elements in the list. Even in the case where we have XPath and get elements by tag name, it will return a list even if we have just one node satisfying the query. So it will be a list of one element, and the list of one element is different from an element. So we always get a list, and if it has one, then we have to make sure that we go into the list and get the first item. And traversing, we can go to the parent node, we can go to the first child, to the last child, we can go to previous sibling, next sibling, and we have a collection of child nodes that we can go through. Let's see, we did all of this. And then, of course, the DOM node has some special functions for DOM element, for instance. So we have the tag name. So rather than using node name, we can get the tag name. And we can check for attributes. We can get and set attributes. And we can search. And remember again, the get elements by tag name. It's searching the subtree, either the whole document, if we don't call this on an element, if you call it on a document, it will search the whole document. If we here search for an element, it would search the subtree. And as we talked about in the XPath case, remember that this can be costly. So in and it can be wrong. So if you, for instance, do get elements by tag name, skier, in the part two of the assignment, you get all the skiers in the skier list, but you also get all the skier in the season lists. So for each of the seasons, you have a skier element with all the entries. It doesn't have the name of the skier. It doesn't have the anything about the skier other than the log distances. So be careful about using get elements by tag name. It's I recommend XPath, because with XPath, you should know what you get. With this, it would go everywhere, and you can't really control where it's searching and what it returns as much as you can in XPath. Yeah, we did that. And where we were was that we looked at the navigation. So this is what we did last or yesterday at the end of the lecture. So we were here. Do I need to increase the font here as well? Or is it okay? It's okay? Can you read the font back there? Yeah, okay, we keep it like this then. So, yesterday we did go through by first finding the list of child nodes. And for that list, we went through one child at a time. And if we go in here, So we find the not here, the nutrition document. So if you open the let me see if I can use this one. Okay. So here, if I query for the root, we need to have the real query. The nutrition. Then we find this nutrition. And if we open the nutrition element, so as you can see, we do get a node list when doing that. The node list has one element. We open the element at the position 0, we get the nutrition element. And here we see the child nodes here. It's a node list. 25 elements, even though we are interested in the 10 food elements. Because in between, we have text nodes, and we have comments, and we have daily values. So when we are interested in processing the food elements, when we go through this set, we need to ignore the ones that are not food. So that's what we did here in the test. So first we looked for whether the node name was food. And if it was, we would process it. Otherwise, we would just go on to the next. So this was the one, because we had the list of all the children, some of them are text, some, in that case, the name would be hash text, comment, the name would be hash comment, and for daily values, it would be daily values. For the food, the name would be food. So we just picked the ones that had food as name, and then we got the ones we were interested in. So this is one of the four ways of iteration. So I think we should go through the other three as well, because it helps us understand the benefits and the disadvantages of each of these ways of doing it. So what was the other way? Well, the other way, a comment from up there yesterday, was that we could go through the siblings, because we have a pointer to. So if you go here again, so what do we have in the node? Well, in the node, we do have the first child. Okay, so first child is a text node. So we aren't interested in that, but from the first child, we can go to the next sibling. Next sibling is a comment, so that's not so interesting either. So we need to go to the next sibling, which is a text. Okay. So we go to the next sibling, which is daily values. Okay. And next sibling is text. And now, in this text, I'm sorry, the next sibling is our food element. So what do we need to do? We get to the first child, and then we go to next sibling, and we pick out the food elements as we go by, until there are no further children or siblings. You agree on that? So how would that look in code? So in this case, we don't have a set. So let's find the first child. What is the first child? Well, we have a pointer to the root element. So if you do root, and which pointer do you follow? The pointer to the first child. Root first child. So what did we do? We went in a loop. So as long as there are children to deal with, what should we do? Well, for now, let's do as we did yesterday. Let's just try to print the child node name and do a kind of a some formatting. And we have to remember, this is a while loop. So while loops can be dangerous because we need to make sure that we stop somehow. So after dealing with one child, we need to go to the next child. And what was the next child? Which pointer do we follow? Next sibling pointer, yes. So we say child should now be the next sibling of the same child. So if I haven't done much, oh, let's see, where am I? There we go. Let's see, DOM traverse. Okay, we still have our 10 items, and now what we see is the same as we did yesterday. I should probably, just for not for confusing everyone, we just comment out what we did yesterday, so we don't have the same list multiple times. Okay, so we have just the one list that we were dealing with. So if you run here, we see we get through all the children, and if you count, you're going to find that the 10 food items are here, but there are other things as well. So what we need to do is the same as we did yesterday. So we need to see if child node name is food, then we want to deal with it. You agree with that? So we go through each of the children and we check, is this a food element or is this a node where the name is food? And if it is, we're going to deal with it. And if it's not, we're going to go to the next one until we've been through the whole list. And when doing so, oops, what did I do? There is a loop here. I forgot to, sorry, this is the one I should overwrite. Otherwise we're not going to go out of the loop. Yeah, so we're going to deal with children and we're going to go to the next one. So we go through each one. We find the first, go through each one, and we can do this other way. We can start at the end and go backwards to the previous one. So we can always navigate the tree, and I guess Frode has been going through the even recursive traversal functions for traversing the whole tree using these pointers, first and next and last. He's probably not talking about last, because I think that's a DOM-specific type of, that you have pointer to the first and last and the next in the row. Now, so this was alternative two. I also said yesterday that we could go through the get elements by tag name. So how would you do that? It would be kind of similar to the first one. I need a slash. There we go. Thanks. So we look for children, and what the children are would be, again, we start from the root, and we call the get elements by tag name, and now we can say that we only care about food elements, and what should we do? Well, again, this is a node list, so we can go through the node list. Remember that on the node list, we have the length variable, and we have the item function. Item will return one element in the list, and that is the standard way. As you, some of you have found, and as we're going to do a little bit long, you could do a for each, because you have other ways in PHP. But the standard way to iterate, and you could even do for I equals to 0 to the size, and then just go through the elements in the set. But here, The standard is to go through the item. There was a question or a comment. Okay. Yeah, so we could do, we know that we have the children, it's a node list. So then it has a length attribute, which is how many elements there are. And then we iterate through all of them. And as we did just previously, let's just print out for now the okay, we need to get the child first. Child equals children, and the list item number I. And then we print the child node name to see what's in here. Okay, I didn't format it. But you can see there are 10 food items. So to make it nice, I forgot the formatting, so we could just add some new line at the end. It's easier to see that way. Okay, now the good thing with the get elements by tag name compared to the child nodes is that we don't get the text nodes, we don't get the comment nodes, we don't get the daily value element, we only get the food elements. Those are the ones we're interested in, which makes our life easier inside the loop, because now we can just process the elements. We don't have to test to see if it's a food, we know it is, because we only search for them. So this print, we can just process the children immediately. You follow me on that? And doing this, we get the results. That was the third way. And the fourth way, would be to do something similar, but now we want to use this XPath. So here we already had created the XPath object. So what we want to do is similar to get elements by tag name, but now we want to use the XPath, which gives us a better control of what we return, or the potential to control better what we return, and we can and we can be ensured that we are more efficient in some cases at least. So what do? We want to find the children again. And now we want to go for a query. What should the query be like? The query should be the same as the one that we had in the get elements by tag name. Then we search for food. Now we can be quite specific. We say we want to be at the top of the document, which is a nutrition element, and find all food. And now, just as this is the last time, let's do a for each. For each, which is not standard DOM. This is a language specific feature. This is PHP specific. So standard DOM, we will have to go to I and length and item like we did before. But for each as child, now let's just do the process element right away this time. Okay. So what did we learn? There are multiple ways to go through this tree. Every node, every element node, has a list of all its children in the child nodes. So we can get that, and we can iterate, and we can test whether the nodes are the ones we look for. We can, if we want to, rather go to the first child and then go through the sibling chain to find the next sibling and go through the whole chain. Or we can use XPath or get elements by tag name to search for those exact elements we want. So as I said, the XPath has the advantage that we can control better what we return, and also remember that get elements by tag name can only return elements. So if we would like to return attributes or other content like text nodes, we can't use get elements by tag name. They will only return elements. But we could use XPath for that. So so XPath is a quite useful tool. It is a good idea to get used to it. And also it's good in our case because we could test the XPath query in the browser to see if it does the job. And then we can go back programming and make sure that at least the query works. So in the document or in the slide set, I have all the four listed here, and they are also in that example document that you could find on the on Blackboard. For the assignment, if you have no other preference, I would suggest using XPath, because that will give you the type of control you want, and you know what you get, and you can test the query to make sure that you get the right result sets in the browser, and you use it. But please, feel free to use whichever. And sometimes, also remember that once you get the one node inside a document, you really have the tools to get everywhere. So remember that if you query, use the XPath to query for a certain ski year inside a season, then you can find the skiers list it was part of, and you can find the season. So whatever you find one node there, you can start going to the sibling, you can go up, you can go down, you can go around. So it's a matter of finding the one node and then following the links to get to everywhere else to gather the information that you need. And that's a little bit what you need to do in a couple of these to get the affiliation history, and to get the total distances, you need to go maybe a little bit up and down to fetch stuff, but especially for affiliations. But that is something that you should be, it should be quite easy, and you should be kind of used to navigate the structure. That is the whole purpose of this assignment. Yeah, so how did you use XPath? We can query, and the query will return a node list, and we can evaluate. As we saw on the example, if you remember from yesterday, we can use XPath to compute the number of elements. So this is, who have you tried to use Firefox for the queries? And you know that in Firefox, you can't really get the sum. And it's because it's using query, and query returns a node list and doesn't know how to return a number to node list. So you can get around it either by using Chrome, or you can use some other calls to call the the XPath evaluate rather than the query. So you can get around it a little bit, but then you need to create some DOM objects and stuff, and or call some other functions. So the easiest is probably to use Chrome, or just assume that you are fine. Then you don't get the number, so that's probably not a good idea. So we looked at that code already. Remember that the XPath object should be created after you load the document, because it will attach itself to the document that you're currently loading. And if you load a new document, it will create a new root element, and XPath need to know what the root element is. So create the XPath object after you loaded the document you're going to use it on. For the assignment, I suggested to make the XPath, if you want to use XPath, I suggested to make it as a member variable, the same way as doc is a member variable, So you don't have to create it in all the functions you want to use it. You create it once after you in the constructor, after you construct the document and load the document, you construct the XPath object, and then you can call the member variable XPath in all parts of your code without having to create it every time you need it. So if you want to use XPath, maybe an idea to keep it around all the time. Yeah. And the question is, how do you get to the content? We are not going to be strict on this assignment. On this assignment, we assume that all the content you need, the text content, is going to be the child of the name or child of whatever you're going to pick out. But in reality, there may be comments, there may be other stuff inside that is making the text appear as multiple nodes. So if you would like to make it robust and get the text content of a node, you would typically have to go through and see if there is more than one element, then you may need to get all the text elements and concatenate them. So, but in your case, it's not necessary to worry about it, because the document just doesn't have, it has just one text, nothing that divides the text into several pieces. But just think about it. There may be multiple text nodes as a child to the. For instance, if there's a comment in there, as a child to the element that you're looking for. So the robust way would be to concatenate the strings. Attribute values. You can test if an element has an attribute value, and then you can get the attribute value. Now, let's see what we're, how we're doing with time. I think we'll make a little bit early break. So we go through how to add nodes to the existing document structure after a break. So if we make it 15 minutes now, and then we meet 3 minutes earlier than what we usually does, and then we'll do the next part. I think this is a good place to take the break. Okay. So, as we were saying yesterday, when we want to get XML content, we have the sex parser, the simple parser that we remember was event-driven. So it goes in a loop, and it processes the or parses the document and finds an element, and finds the end of an element, and finds some text, and finds some commands. So that's the way it works. And then we said that the advantage of DOM is that we could use it also to manipulate, to modify the document. So this is how this works. We start by creating elements, or typically we add element to the document, and we set values, if there are attribute values there. And if it's supposed to have text content, we need to create the text node, add the text node to, as a child, to the element, and then add the element to the tree. So we have to create each of the nodes one by one, and then we have to insert them into the tree in the proper way. So we need to do both. So this is some sample code, but I think we can just go through it here as well. So I'm just here. This is a very simple document. It's the one that we already the nutrition document. So as you can see here, we have make it a bit bigger. We have a document. And this doesn't work, unfortunately. I think it is because when we load this document, it resets. But I was hoping to have a nice printout of the document. It's not so nice. We'll look at it. We'll still see what we do, though. So we load the same nutrition document, and throw an exception if you can't load it. And we just print it out. So in the DOM document object on PHP, you have a number of save functions. Save XML will save this into a string that we can print, as I do here. We have a save function that will save the XML document to a file, so you can use it as a file later on. So we have operations for what we call serializing or for saving. So if we just run this now, we see it will just print out, say if I look here, it will print out the whole XML document that we have been working with, the 10 items. So here it starts with daily values. We can see the food, the first vegetable, the first bread. We see all the 10 food items. Now, so let's start playing with it. So let's add some food. And if you remember the previous slide, what do we need to do? First, we need to create it. And I said yesterday that the only way to create an XML node is to ask the DOM document to do it. It's like a factory, because all nodes need to be part of the same document. And the way they did that was to specify that only a document. You can't do a new DOM element or a new DOM text node. You can't do that. So what you can do is to say, the document, which here is just doc, because it's a local variable, so it's not a member variable, so I don't have to do this. Please remember to do this in your assignments, because then if you don't do this doc, then it will try to create a local one. But here I can just do doc, and then create element. And what element do I want? Food. So if you go here on the PHP manual, we'll go to DOM document, and then we'll see here that we have the create element. It takes a string, and we can, if we want to, pass a value, which is not standard, so we're not going to use that. We're just going to create the element. And as you see here, it's new instance of DOM element. This node will not show up in the document unless it is inserted in the tree. So we could try that. So if you do, did I store it? I'm sorry, I did not. So if I store this, so now we created the food item. Now the question is, will it be here? Well, it's not at the end. We don't have any empty food node. No empty nodes. So, okay. It's not attached to the tree. Oops. We need to do that ourselves. Oh, this is where I want to be. We created the food item. And how do we attach it to the tree? It said append child is the way to go. So we can on doc. What is doc? That's a document. What is the root element? The root element is, if you don't know, we can always look it up. In, if you have the DOM document, we have a variable or a property called document element. Document element is the root element. So here we can say the document element. Sorry. Meant. And we can append child. And what is the child, or what we would like to append as a child? Food. And we can see here, we have an empty food here. Now we can also, that element, we can also say food set attribute, and we have this type attribute. And we can set it to, okay, now for now we just set it to test. Okay, so type test comes in here. But we would like to add more to it. So it should have a name. So how do we add the name? Well, we need to create a name element, which is document create element, and let's call it name. It's doc, absolutely right. That's our variable. And we have to remember to attach it. Where should name be attached? It should be a child of food. So food, we append child name. And since food is already attached to the tree, this will now be attached to the tree as well. So it has a name right now. The name is empty. And the standard way of doing this is now to create a text node. The same doc. Create text node. And what is the text? Well, we could say that a test item. And again, we need to attach it to the tree. Where should we attach it? We say that the name is the parent, so then we just append child text. Let me see, we have a food item, the type was test, the name is a test item, and that was our food item. And this is the way. So we have to add the other properties as well. And some of these properties may have children, so we need to add the children. So that's the way to work, by adding the branch, and then we attach the branch to the tree. So the question is this easier than just write XML straight out to the file? It depends. You have a lot of, for simple documents, probably not. But for more complex documents and where you are in the risk of using characters that are not standard in or accepted in the body of XML, this is a safer way of doing it. A question? Yeah, the formatting is kind of broken, as you say, and that was what I was saying I thought I would be fixing here. So if you look up here, sorry, there, this format output was supposed to nicely format the output, but the problem is that since I opened or loaded the document, I think that's the reason, it overrides this, and the default is that it will not format the output, and it overrides, and you can't set it after the document has been loaded. So, but don't worry, this is for the browsers or whoever would work on this would typically not worry so much. But ideally, there should be a fine print version, and by doing this, I should have gotten it better, but I don't. So I think that if you, yeah, you can mess around a little bit, and I think you can actually do it if you run it, import this again, and do it once again. But yeah, don't worry too much. It doesn't matter, because it's that the extra blanks has nothing to do with the processing. It's just for us to think it's easier and to read, but it's not so important. But I agree, it should have been nice to see it well formatted. So this is the way it works. You start by creating the elements, you set the attributes, you create the text content, you add the text content to the item and the item to the tree. And you do that for all the elements, and you can create a tree, or you can change the tree by doing this. Now, if you want to delete an element, remove it from the tree, the only way to do that is to have the parent remove you. No, you can't remove, you can't delete a node itself. You have to have the parent kick you out of the house. That's the only way to get out here. So you can, just calling on the nodes, you can have them have their parent remove themselves. So to do this here, so we know that this one is adding a node to the tree. So if we then here say now that the food is added to the tree, so we can say that we ask food to have its parent remove itself as a child. Remove child, and then food. This way you can unlink from the tree. You have your parent, take out to the tree. And by this, we should not see the node anymore. A question? How would you delete the root node? You go to the document and reset the document element, or you remove the document element. So, but typically the kind of the root is kind of the root. So you would typically have a root only when you create empty documents. But you will have to delete that one. Let's. And there are some, saving, we already saw that. You could save it to a file, or we could save it to a string. We save it to a string, so we could print and look at it, but you could also save it directly to a file for later use. You find more information on the tutorials, point DOM tutorial, and the PHP DOM manual. There are some other DOM tutorials as well, but they are typically not in PHP. So, and the tutorials point even that one. So you have to kind of map the API to the host language. You will find Java, JavaScript, or other languages. So the operations are the same, but of course the syntax will be different from language to language. And PHP has some convenience extensions to the standard DOM, and other languages will too. So you just have to get used to reading up and understanding what's there. Now, what I plan on doing for the rest of the day. So this is the XML DOM and parsing processing. So what we'll do for the rest of the day is to look at other technologies that could do the same thing. I don't know how many of you have used JSON. So some of you have used JSON, and it's surprisingly similar. So I'm just going to go quickly through JSON and say a little bit about it, and then you will also. I don't think we have time today, but there is also a slide set on no SQL databases, non-relational databases. So you'll find JSON, for instance, as a format being used in Firebase solution or a MongoDB version. So there are other database alternatives than relational ones. So I think it's, and you also find XML databases if you like to store XML in a database. So this is interesting to look at and to see in the whole picture, but it's not critical. So that's why we take it at the end of the this week and see how far we get into it, and continue a little bit next week on that part. So what is JSON? So we are here. If you look at the list, we are here. Alternatives to XML. How can we provide document, hierarchical document structures or data structures, hierarchical data structures, without using XML, using other ones. And JSON, we'll talk about these JSON structures, what are the ingredients, what's the syntax, and then a little bit of JSON in PHP, and we're going to do JSON in JavaScript as well, because I'm going to show you a little bit on the, again, the browser. The browser is our which is a standard tool here. So, JSON, it's an abbreviation of JavaScript Object Notation. Now, if you look at the specification, they say that it's developed to be easy for humans to read or write, easy for machines to parse and generate, a language-independent format, and a lightweight data interchange format. Have you heard things like that before? This is almost the same as I said when I started doing XML. The reason for looking at XML is that we had this, you remember that dat file with the floppy disks, and we said that, okay, XML is easy to read, it's easy to parse and to generate, and it's language-independent way of dealing with data. The difference between XML and JavaScript is that it's trying to use conventions that are familiar to programmers. I had to say, probably more familiar to JavaScript programmers than C++ programmers, but that's different. But it's because it's using some of their way, the scripted language's way of mapping names to character strings to variable names and back and forth. It's a little bit. You are not so used to it from a C++ world, but if you are from a JavaScript world, some of these things are more understood. So the JSON JavaScript Object Notation data structures. We have collections of name value pairs. That's one thing. So here, for instance, we say that we have some node name value pairs here. So this is, think of this as an object, or think of this as a row in a database. So it's one row, it's one object. It has two properties: property code and property name or attributes, and the values for the attribute value of code is rock, and the attribute value of name is rock with the O. So this is a way to describe objects, or if you want, rows in a table. So you say, what are the name of the columns or name of attributes, and what are the values? And they are separated with comma, and the curly braces are being used to say, what's in here is an object, or a row if you want, with certain properties. And the property values are here, and the names of the properties or attributes, they are here. The other data structure is a list. It's a list of values. So here, for instance, or an array. So here we have a list of two values. So this is now, this is 0 and 1. So an array is, we are quite used to arrays. So this is what this would be. This, you can say that the other one here would be like an associative array. So you can look up what is the code, what is the name, because each field has a name. So you can look up based on the key rather than the position in an array. So then we can start putting it together. So this, what is this? This is a list of objects. The objects, they have code names. These seem to be objects or a table. This could be a table in a database where rows, where this is a rock, this is a pop row, this is a hard rock, hip-hop, jazz, musicals. So, if we go to somewhere, it doesn't matter where we are, we can bring up a blank page. Now, what we can do is that inside JavaScript, we have, JSON parse. So we can parse something and see what we're going to end up having. So let's parse something. So let's parse that. So there's a, there is an array of things. So let's say we make a list of two objects. The first object had code was RCK, and what was the name? Name was Rock. I need to have a couple of these guys. And we have another object where the code is pop, and name might be popular music. And this way we can go on, create more objects. And if doing this, we see here that we get an array. If we open that array, we find two elements, and we can open the one element, and we can see the code and the name. And now these are, so let's say that we create an object here. So we have an object equals this, the object that is being parsed. This is a JSON object. Now, on this object, it's an array, so we can find the last or the second element, and we can find its code or name. So from just describing braces, describing a structure with square brackets for an array of values, or curly braces for objects having properties and values, we can create this structure. And by just doing parse, all of a sudden we have a data structure with associative arrays and arrays that we can use. Rather than having XML and parsing and iterating, we can get this kind of structure and directly access the structure as sets of associative and regular array operations. So let's say a more complex example. Let's say we have a database of products. So this object has a link to products. And what are the products? Well, it's an array of something. So these are objects. So let's start by filling in some of the information about the objects. So that's product number, it's the name, it's the price, and some detailed information on these two products. So these are the variables. Now, the thing about this is that there is no schema here. So we can add whatever attributes we want. There is nothing saying that all needs to have the product number or they all need to have a name. That is just by convention. Or if you... There is some work on some JSON schemas, but for now, we don't worry so much about it. We just say, okay, we can put in whatever, but it's a good idea to follow the same structure so that we can easily find what's in the document from a program. Okay, so let's put in some information here. So there are some of the values are simple strings, like here. The product numbers are simple. The names are simple. But the price is an object, and the detailed information is a list of information elements. Okay, so this could, for instance, be like this. So the price has a currency and an amount. So this is in Norwegian kroner, and this is the other one. So you have how much is it, and what's the currency, which is an object. And the detailed information, we can see there's a list of text description elements. So this way we can build up, and you can easily see how this could be an XML document. So XML document where you have products, so the products will be the root element, and then there will be, for each product, there will be a child element for the product number, child element for the name, child element for the price. The price will have two children, one for the value and one for the currency, and so we will pretty much build up a tree the same way as we have been doing, but now this is more like a programmer's view, because now it gets into arrays of arrays that we can go through and use directly. If you were to use, or later on if you need a database and you find that the document database is the right way to go, then most likely you're going to end up using JSON. And JSON is quite a lot used for communication between clients and servers. You have probably heard about web services, and web services are based on XML data. You send XML documents between various partners. So if you exchange information from one company, it's going to order something from another company. It may be in EDI, maybe an XML format, but now we see more and more these are JSON encoded. So communication between different servers to request and to return the information, we will see more and more in this kind of format. So it's not terribly difficult to understand. You basically have either objects or arrays. The objects are in the curly braces with the pairs of key and value, and you can have many values separated in the square brackets to separate multiple values in an array. You could see that JavaScript has the JSON object, and you can parse and encode on that. In PHP, you have the JSON decode to create objects, PHP objects from JSON, which will be the same as the JSON parse that we just saw. It will create JavaScript objects. This one will create PHP objects, and the other way around. By encoding into JSON, you would take a structure of arrays, typically, or objects, and you just feed it in here, and it will encode it, and out comes the JSON string that you can just send out to whatever party is somewhere else over the network, and they will decode it and bring it into C++ or C# or whatever language. So you can exchange information between different systems by encoding JSON, the same way as XML was intended to do. XML is also good for, can be used for it, but it's a bit more heavyweight. It requires, as you probably see in the iteration, you have to go up and find the length and find the item and dereference and go up and down. So it's unfamiliar for a programmer. It's an unfamiliar structure. So you have to get used to the API definitions in a different way. Then here is everything is just an array, and you go up and down through the keys and through the elements. So, which one should you use? Right now it's both are self-documented, both are platform independent, both are human readable, I should say, and both support hierarchical structures, which are kind of important. But JSON is simpler, and it's for a programmer it's easier to deal with. It's less time to learn JSON and how to use it. If you're used to data structures using arrays and associative arrays, this comes quite naturally. XPath and XML and DOM and all these things require more to understand. But once you understand it, I would say it's also quite easy to use. But there is a bit of a learning curve to understand the structure and be able to use it. And yet, XML it has more tools when it comes to validation that we'll talk about next week. Transformation, we may not be able to talk so much about it, but a little bit. And styling. So for all of this, if the XML is not just shipping data from one system to the other, but you also like to display it, show it, turn it into something that the users can reformat, if you would like to have tools for validation, tools for manipulation, XML still has more. And XML is more usable if you have what you call mixed content. You remember mixed content? Where it's not just text or just elements, it's a mix. JSON isn't good for that. JSON is for structured data. It's called semi-structured, so yes, there are texts in there, but typically you don't have a mix of text and elements the way that you can do in XML. So XML is being used for HTML and some other, where you have lots of text and some markup in between. And for that, JSON is not necessarily the best thing. So, but for us as developers, it's nice because we have different tools for the job, and we can pick the one that that works the best. Yeah, there is some information about JSON. So this is not a JSON course. But I think since it's so close to XML, I thought it's good to know it. And since also in databases, we focus most on relational databases, but there are also hierarchical databases, document databases, where you have XML as one alternative or JSON as another alternative. So I think seeing it, understanding the base concepts, and it's not very, very hard to understand, I think it's a good idea that we touch it, although we can't spend much time, and there are no assignments on this part, but at least you could see the link and the relationship to what we had talked about already. And just use it, because it's very convenient. So if you are to in a PHP program, if you like to create a structure with lots of arrays, one in the other, it's much easier to just create this JSON constant and just make it into a JSON object and parse it with JSON, rather than trying to create all of these calling arrays here and there and inserting elements. It's more messy code. Yeah, then we won't be able to go through all of the NoSQL part, but let's talk a little bit about it. Sorry, that was not the one. Because this is a database course, and databases, we talked about it at the very beginning. Databases, what is a database? It's a collection of data that is logically related. And in a database system, we typically have many databases, databases for different purposes. And we have tools to operate. Now, the traditional database course is relational databases. So you learn relational databases. We talk about conceptual modeling, and we make it into a logical model, a relation model in this case, and we talk about normalization, and we go through SQL for querying. That's a typical. Now, in this course, we have also covered XML, which is a tree structure. It's not flat tables with relationships, it's a tree structure. And we talked about XPath, which is a hierarchical query language, as opposed to SQL, which is a relational language. So when you come out to program systems that need data to be stored in the database, it's not necessarily a relational database that's the answer. It could be some of the other systems. So we can't cover all of those in all the details, but at least I think you should have a bit of a flavor of what the alternatives are and what are the reasons for choosing or for not choosing some of these other systems. So it's really something up here. I don't think Dipti talked much about it, did she? No, because I usually cover this as part of the database design part, the final part of the database design. But we'll talk more about this here next week as well when we talk about indexes and the database, more the implementation, physical implementation. But this is really going beyond the relational database. And as I said at the beginning of the course, before relational databases, we had hierarchical databases and network databases. So we're kind of back there where we started, because now we have document databases. They used to be called hierarchical. Now we have graph databases. We used to call them network databases, but pretty much the circle is completed. We're back where we started, but we have more choices, because now we have the relational, we have the hierarchical or the document databases, we have the graph or the network databases, and we have other alternatives. So it's not always easy to know which one to do. I will not be able to go through it all, but at least start a little bit talking about what are the ways to store XML in the database, because what we are seeing now will be XML data, and sometimes we have XML documents, or we would like to create XML documents based on data in the database. So what are the alternatives for storing XML in the database? And if you go to the textbook, it lists, depending on how you number them, they list a few alternatives for doing that. And which alternative to choose depends on what you want to do. So here, the needs of the users may differ. Sometimes the user will be interested in always getting the whole documents. So think about the web. On the web, you would typically, if you like to read something on the web, you like it all. You don't care about the second to the last paragraph. You like to read it. You want it all. If this is a big product catalog, you just want to find information about the product you're about to buy. So it depends a bit. Are you in the narrative in which you, whenever you query, you like to get the whole document? Or are you more in the data-centric, where you like to have just this description, this small part of the document that describes exactly what you're looking for? Knowing this will help in designing which solution to go for. Why would you want to go for a relational database? I mean, you can store data, XML data, in an XML database. You can. I'll show a reference to that database later on. But why would you store it in a relational database? Number one, it may be something that you need to, because most of the data you already have is relational, and you have some XML data that is in addition to the relational data. Or it may be that the company and the technical staff and the programmers, they are used to the relational database, and they know that, and they will know the XML, and it will be high cost to get to learn and build up an infrastructure for an XML database. And there are some databases or database management systems like MySQL and Oracle that offer XML tools and offer ways to simplify storing XML data inside the relational database. So we'll talk about three ways of storing XML in the database. Number one is to store the whole document as one attribute. Dipti talk about character large objects and binary large objects? So that's a data type that you can say that this column is gigabyte of text. So you have in one column, you find the whole XML document. This is convenient if let's say you have a number of users, and each user, you have an XML document that describes the user. Then you have the username and address and everything, and you have one column for the XML description of the user. It works fine, but only if you really want the whole document, then it's good. Then you get the whole document, you don't need to do much, you just get the attribute and you return it. Doesn't work very well if you want to find pieces in there, if you like to query inside the structure. Although you may provide, Dipti talked a little bit about stored procedures, so you can program some stored procedures that will simplify searching and getting information in there. MySQL and Oracle, they do quite a lot of these additional services for that kind of storing. Then there is an alternative, which is a schema-independent table. And typically, if you think about the DOM, so if you think about each type of DOM node, you create a table, and then you fill in all the information from the document. You break it up in the individual ingredients, and you just put it in, and you have some keys to refer to the parents and do everything. And this works fine if you have a shallow document, typically a data-centric document, so it's not too deep, it's not too complex. You can do that. The third way is what's called shredding, and it's the most complex and in many cases the most usable. What it means that you have a database structure that fits very well with your actual document. So in your case, for instance, what do we have in the skier logs? Yeah, we have information about skiers. Okay, so we have a skiers table, and the information about clubs, we have clubs table, and then we have some yearly distances, and these are really or log entries. So a log entry is linked to the skier, and then we have affiliations, and affiliations are really relationships between clubs and skiers. So we can design a schema with log entries, with skiers, with clubs, and relationships in between. And we map the XML document to this structure. And we can go back and forth. Many cases this will be handcrafted. We know as designers what is the best way, what's the best representation of the model. But there are also some other tools, and again, this is some of the tools where these database vendors do offer you tools. If you have an XML schema, then we'll talk about XML schemas next week. If you have an XML schema, they will try to, from the schema, generate what they believe will be a good database structure, and then create the necessary tools to map from the XML document to the database schema and back again. So you have two schemas. You have the database, the relational schema, and you have the XML schema. And they somehow need to be mapped. And you need mapping functions. And if it's handcrafted, you need to handcraft your mapping functions as well. If it is based on the XML schema, then your tools will offer you some support. Okay, so I think that this is what we'll cover today. And next week, we'll just wrap up a little bit the remaining part on this, and we dive into XML schemas. Okay. And remember that there is no lecture tomorrow. So tomorrow, you have the time for working on the assignment, rather.